Good evening. 36 hours later, the encounter at the Pathankot Air Base is still not over. The Home Secretary in his most recent briefing says that there are at least two terrorists. He will not speculate on whether there could be more who remain to be neutralized. The assault, a brazen one, has left 7 Indians martyred and 20 of our own injured between the Air Force and the National Security Guard, the NSG. Remember, as this attack took place, there was actually advance intelligence in place. The Home Minister Rajnath Singh curiously declared the operation to be successful yesterday, even before the operation had ended. He is now saying he will not comment on anything till the operation is over. And the government and the military is saying that the operation will not be declared over till all the bodies have been recovered, seen, verified and counted. Over the next 90 minutes on our special analysis, we look at both the national security implications of what we are seeing happening at the air base in Pathankot, but also the political questions. Because in many ways, for anyone who has followed India-Pakistan closely, right after the Prime Minister's very, very audacious and some would say brave Lahore stopover, one expected that terrorists would try and retaliate. But with the air base, with a strategic base like the air station in Pathankot coming under assault, and with public reaction still processing, 7 Indians martyred, 20 injured. Has this proven to be the first litmus test for Mr. Modi's Pakistan policy? And can he persist with the path of dialogue that he's undertaken? Remember, the foreign secretaries are scheduled to meet on the 15th in Islamabad. Should those talks still happen? On this program today, we'll also be raising the multiple questions that have arisen as to whether there could have been a clearer communication policy, a one-stop communication center, which is something that every big encounter seems to throw up, but we don't seem to learn the lessons from. Let's introduce our guest now. With me in the studio is Dulat, who is of course the former chief of the RANW, General Atta Hasnain. He's the former general officer commanding of 15th Corps, Brigadier Gurmeet Kaval, who's of course been with the Center for Land and Warfare Studies, G. Parthasarthi, somebody who knows Pakistan very well, has been High Commissioner there, but also interestingly attended a meeting with the External Affairs Minister today, who is sounding out many former Pakistan envoys to try and evolve a strategy. So more from him in a moment from now. Also joining me from Bangalore today is of course the former Air Force Chief. We're joined by Air Chief Marshal Fali Major, and for a political perspective, Abhishek Singhvi of the Congress is with us, and Sambit Patra of the BJP is with us as well. But first to my colleague Sudhi Ranjan Sen in Pathankot. Sudhi, without giving any operational details away, and we're saying that again and again on this channel, is there any update to what the Home Secretary has already told us, that they continue to be at least two? That was a very significant phrase he used, at least two terrorists waiting to be neutralized.
Well, yes. I mean, Barkha, the air officer commanding the Pathankot base just spoke to us again shortly. And he was very, very clear that let's not speculate on the numbers. And it is only after we have completely cleared the air base, completely sanitized the air base, and are completely sure that there are no more remaining terrorists, it is only then will we talk about numbers. On the ground, what we can tell you, Barkha, is that intermittent firing has been going on, which means that the operations are going on. It is unlike yesterday, where the operations were called off just after sundown. And rightly so, the area had been cordoned off in which they thought, the terrorists could have been there. And the search and, search operations or sanitizing operations began at, early morning today. Today, we can tell you that the operations still continuing. And the indications I am getting is that the military either has been able to completely seclude and contain the terrorists, whatever the numbers are, and will go for a final assault and try to eliminate all the terrorists that are there, because otherwise it doesn't really explain why they would continue the operations in the middle of the night, after nightfall.
But right. So they stay with us. There'll be many more questions over the next 60 minutes, and it would be good to have you on the ground with us as questions come up here in our discussion. Let's just get first reactions from the Army and the Air Force, and then I think we'll open it up. Let me get Fali Major to come in. Air Marshal Major, how do you see what's happened? The importance of this airbase first. I think it's very important for our viewers to understand context. Why is this airbase so strategically important? What does it mean for this base to come under attack?
Barkha, the Air Force base in Pathankot, as you know, is just about 30-35 kilometers as the crow flies from the international boundary. It is also geographically located at a place which borders three states, Punjab, Himachal, and on the other side, of course, J&K. And given the fact that the international boundary runs pretty close to it, and also the fact that this base has been used in earlier wars and will be used in future wars for launching operations and recovering aeroplanes, it is of great significance to the Indian Air Force. The assets basically on any forward located airfield are very, very precious and need to be protected. Given the old system of classical wars, all Air Force bases were protected for, you know, either paratroopers coming in or some kind of an other kind of assault, and not terrorist strikes, as is the case in the recent past.
Okay.
And therefore, the protection of such airfields is very, very important. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, the significance of this air force need not be overemphasized.
General Hasnain, though the fact is that there was advance intelligence, we had at least a day from what we understand and what we know to actually move in NSG commandos. This encounter is still on. Does that surprise you?
Not at all. I would say it would probably take longer.
Why?
If I was the commander there, I would tell them 72 hours more.
Why?
What is the hurry? Any time you hurry up with an operation, you only add to your casualties. Right? Have patience. I find the media is actually looking at it very positively this time and not hurrying up either. They're not putting the pressure either. But there seems to be a tremendous amount of speculation in the public as to why this operation is taking 38 hours, 40 hours. I have seen operations in the valley in much smaller locations, much smaller objectives, which have lasted for 96 hours or more. And what is the hurry anyway? The idea is go in, painstakingly go out, carry out your operations and take them out. The more you hurry, the more you're going to get casualties.
Okay, so we have a military perspective. I just want to get a political perspective in, and then we'll start looking at the diplomacy and the other questions that arise from this. Sambit Patra, the fact is that this is a litmus test for Prime Minister Modi. And what's curious is he hasn't said very much. All he has said is that enemies of humanity will be defeated, have been defeated. He's not taken the name of Pakistan, though the Home Minister has. The Prime Minister hasn't. Can we take it to be that the Prime Minister does not want to squander the political capital that he riskily invested with his stopover in Lahore? This is not the Prime Minister Modi of the 2014 campaign, certainly. This is certainly not the BJP we saw pre-2014.
No, I think we are overreading all these. I mean, as far as the statement of the Prime Minister is concerned, I think there is no change, no shift in stand of the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister has always spoken aggressively and, in fact, giving a befitting reply to all those forces which act against India. Secondly, we have to remember, what's the hurry was the exact word said by the general before me. In the sense that when the combat
but
is going on.
But he's talking about the operation.
When the fight
I'm
is
asking
still on.
You about the political response.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm coming to. I mean, what's the hurry in the sense that when the operation is still on the ground, when the combat is on, I think the priority of any government would be to see to it that the combat becomes successful, the logistics and the combats are right. Before commenting on whether we will have talks with Pakistan or not, who are the ones who are responsible, I'm sure. Pakistan, responsible the evidence is available, these things would be tabled. No one is going to provide any kind of alibi to Pakistan. But the issue is, these things should be thoroughly researched, these things should be thoroughly gone through before put on the table by none other than the highest authority in the country. That's the Prime
Minister. The Home Minister spoke of a befitting reply to Pakistan yesterday. So he was the one who named Pakistan, not me. And in that context, I was saying the Prime Minister had not. Now, that could be wise. I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying it as it is. Abhishek Singhvi, is this the time for the Congress to say, whatever our differences, there's an encounter still on, this is not the time to question the government on its Pakistan policy? Abhishek.
Look, Barkha, I've been abroad, so I don't know the nitty-gritty of some of the responses, but I don't find anything of the sort which you are rightly apprehending happening. I think in a matter of national security, on a Pakistan or a Pakistan sponsor or a Pakistan-related intrusion, the country is one. There cannot be, has not been, and will not be any politics. And I, for one, obviously stand with India in this hour of national security. There is no doubt about that. Having said that, I must add that we do not have, and as you know, a responsible member of a responsible opposition, I will go no beyond that. We do not have direct evidence yet of the extent and the degree of informal Pakistan-sponsored state actors of some kind or the other. But I have no doubt that the rogue elements, and I'm not yet going to the government of Pakistan, there are behind this, and they are probably clearly snooking a nose at the initiative from their point of view of Nawaz Sharif, from our point of view of our Prime Minister, because these rogue elements would not want that to go further. I think the fact that we will overcome this, whether we do it in 48 or 72 or 96 hours, is beyond doubt. I mean, this is too puny a situation for the might of India not to overcome, and that these people will be killed is not the issue. The issue is that we have to, it's a warning to us, we have to hasten very carefully, we have to hasten even slowly, and we have to ensure that we always fence ring and ring fence all the safeguards, so that when we talk, for example, we say, look, these are the deliverables we want, let us see what deliverables you can give in actually controlling this fellow of Jaish, which is behind this apparently.
Does it surprise you that we haven't really heard much from the Prime Minister, or do you think that that's actually sensible in, given that the operation is still on, Abhishek?
I think during the time the operation is on, one will understand it. One may not, and one can also understand the fact that he has thrust out his hand and then finds this within a few days of that visit. So he would not want to, directly start blaming Nawaz Sharif. Frankly, to be honest, Varkha, at the moment, I don't think Nawaz Sharif can be blamed in that sense. That's why I use the words carefully. The rogue elements behind Nawaz Sharif's system, yes. But we have no direct evidence yet. But if there is the slightest evidence of that, Varkha, then I think India needs to recalibrate very strongly. Cosmetic gestures will have to be abolished. And we have to do some hard-nosed diplomacy and give and take from both hands simultaneously, and more take than give.
Okay, I just want to bring in Ambassador Parthasarathy now. Rogue elements is the phrase that Abhishek Singhvi is actually using, but you've actually written already, and I read your initial analysis, that you believe that this does have the imprint of the Pakistan Army and the ISI.
Well, they have come in with global positioning systems, highly sophisticated weapons, heavily armed, and they have also come in duly prepared for guerrilla warfare. Now, quite obviously, that needs military or paramilitary training. That's one. Two, a group like this, so well and heavily armed, cannot cross the international border with the chaps deployed on the border knowing nothing about it. So, let's be real. The extent of involvement at what level, we will find out in course of time. But I have no doubt in my mind that this has been certainly acquiesced in, if not facilitated by, people deployed on the border.
So where does that leave Mr. Modi's Lahore initiative? Because you're not buying the rogue elements theory, clearly. You're not buying that theory.
No.
You're saying that it was too sophisticated?
I am saying that it was too sophisticated. What now? Who are the elements who helped them through? Whether they are rogue elements or not, I can't say. But there was no question that elements of the Pakistani state would have to facilitate.
So where does that process. Where does that leave the police? Where does that leave the Lahore gamble?
Well, I don't call it a Lahore gamble. So what? You had the Kargil attack after the Vajpayee's visit. So what's the big deal?
We went ahead. So should we keep talking?
My point is, you have to engage. I was talking to Nawaz Sharif at the height of Kargil. Look, there are two things you must understand which people like you don't. There is a difference between engaging a government and a dialogue process. The dialogue process was premised on an end to terrorism. Okay? Mm. So I have always opposed that dialogue process. But keeping contact even in times of war is something which is is necessary, and we have done it.
Okay, so let me
at the height of the wars between countries.
Yeah, Abhishek, you wanted to
come Americans
there.
Have been in touch. The Americans have been in touch with the Taliban right through this operation.
Abhishek, go ahead.
Only the following clarification that we are saying the same thing. When I said rogue elements, I meant that I'm only giving the benefit of doubt also. That's also a cautious thing at the moment. To Nawaz Sharif alone. Rogue elements, I meant all the other elements like ISI or RB, etc. Certainly they are behind.
Mr. Singh, I have 100% agree with you. Elements. I 100% agree with you.
There is no doubt of that. And that's the one I was trying to say, that I can at the moment give the benefit of doubt that, you know, it sounds unlikely. That's all that I will say.
And I share that.
But certainly what we are seeing cannot be without, whether you call it rogue elements as I called it, or ISI or army, elements there who do not want it. It could well be, let me add, that there is a small section in the army which wants greater thaw, greater normalization, but a large section, as frequently happens in Pakistan, which doesn't want it.
Okay, now
and that is certainly behind this kind of a maneuver.
Now the Prime Minister is back in Delhi. We're just getting information that he's actually chairing a high-level meeting with the National Security Advisor and others. Kaval, you have raised actually some questions on your Twitter feed today about some of the confusion that has accompanied this particular operation, and it continues to. One of the confusions, General Hussain, as you will know, was over what our own fatalities were. The number was put out as 3 yesterday officially, but unofficially almost every one of us were told that it was 6. Today we are putting that figure now at 7, 20 injured. So that was one confusion. There have also been multiple comments from multiple people. Rajnath Singh, for example, saying that the operation was successful yesterday. Most people took that statement to mean the operation was over. Has there been ineffective or I would say self-goalish communication on this encounter?
May I first comment on the rogue element
yes,
part?
Yes.
There's no such thing as rogue elements. The Jaish-e-Mohammed, the Lashkar-e-Taiba are directly under the control of the ISI. We give them justification to say that there are rogue elements if we parrot it out like that. They are fully under control. This, like Ambassador Parthasarathy said, has the signature of the ISI written all over it. To talk about communication, yes, in every such operation, somebody should be in charge of both the operation, one single commander, and somebody should be appointed by that commander to communicate with the media. This lesson has been learned from Mumbai 26/11 onwards, and unfortunately, we don't seem to practice
it. So what's the kind of confusion that you saw evident this time that could have been easily avoided?
Well, talking about casualties, how many have been killed, how many casualties we've suffered, when the contours of the operation were not clear and the operation is still ongoing. That kind of confusion generates a lot of doubt in the mind of the public and is best avoided.
So you think there should be a single point communication, but that communication could be frequent, could be regular at least, Dulat Sahab?
Yeah, of course it should be regular. I agree with both Ambassador Parthasarathy and what the Brigadier has said, that, we talk about, Pakistan talks about rogue elements and non-state actors, but their non-state actors are actually our state actors. And if they are really non-state actors, then there are two questions which arise, that does the Pakistan establishment make use of these non-state actors? And if not, then they must explain how this happens, and they must cooperate in weeding them out.
But all of you seem to be saying that even that you don't see the Jaish as a non-state actor, but yet this should not impact what has been begun in Lahore. Partha, is that a fair summons?
What I'm saying is, look, I'm not aware of what were the details of what happened in Lahore. All I can say is that even in times of conflict, nation states remain in touch with each other. There is a process of engagement. That process of engagement must go. Now, if you ask me the next step, so should the foreign secretary go?
I say yes.
Let us go and discuss this. Let us give them all the evidence we have.
Yeah, you all agree that the foreign secretary should meet.
Absolutely. Foreign secretary should meet. I think the NSA should meet, whether we get to know of it or not. Because again, the point made just now, that even in the worst of times, during the Cold War, the KGB and the CIA never stopped talking.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I saw something very positive after Mr. Modi's Lahore visit. That come what may, the communication between the NSAs would not stop.
Yeah.
And let's hope that never stops. And I think the Lahore process, whether you call it gamble, I thought you called it a master to a stroke.
No, I think it's, I thought it was a very, very brave
I thought so
welcome
too, and
move.
I think
it but I did not, I clearly see the political risk that it comes with. And that's fine, that's woven into any big decision.
You have to take those political
risks.
When that
risk plays out in the way that it is playing out today at the Pathankot Air Base, will people back that initiative? Will you be able to take public opinion along? And I just want to get in the politicians briefly before I go back to Air Marshal Fali Major. Abhishek Singhvi, you began with the premise that if it is rogue elements, we won't question the Modi Pakistan policy. But almost every strategic expert on this panel today says, if it is the Jaish-e-Mohammed, that is not a rogue element. That is the imprint of the Pakistan Army and the ISI. Now what? Now will you still back Mr. Modi's Pakistan initiative?
No, I think we are, that's why I clarified. I said we are perhaps getting lost in semantics. What I meant by rogue element was just that not the direct involvement of the government as in government or the Nawaz Sharif angle. That's all that I meant. I don't think anybody in India doubts that Jaish-e-Mohammed and other organizations like that are fully supported, equipped, trained and sent out by people who are elements in the army and the ISI. So that's the purpose of my clarification. Secondly, certainly the more you find out, and we have our own sources to find that out, obviously yeah. It's early days within 72 hours or 48 hours to say it, the more you find it out, of course, it must lead to a calibration every second of Mr. Modi's policy.
But
he must confront them, he must insult them, he must tell them upfront and let them, if it is there very clearly, he must let the world know. The policy of international opprobrium and embarrassment is a very powerful weapon in international diplomacy.
You're agreeing, Pastor?
I
disagree.
I don't think a breakfast or a lunch with a Prime Minister of Pakistan should stop that or that Mr. Modi should hesitate in doing
I
that.
I entirely agree. Let me put it to you this way. These fellows from the BBC and CNN, Great Freedom of the Press Wallahs, are describing
as gunmen. These terrorists as gunmen.
Were the people who killed in Paris gunmen?
No, that's absolutely true.
So what I am saying is, this is a heaven-sent opportunity to us to expose this Western duplicity and tell the world what really happened.
But I do want to ask Sambit Patra a couple of questions on the politics that is already beginning to play out, even while the encounter is still not declared closed. Sambit, one, I must ask you, why did the Home Minister 24 hours ago on Twitter say, I salute our forces on a successful operation? Should he have been making these comments? Have any of you been briefed? Has the government adopted a cohesive one-point response system? Then you all blame the media. The media will report whatever all of you say. One. And two, I want you to respond to a tweet by Omar Abdullah, if we can bring this up, saying business as usual is all very well, but a speech about yoga by the Prime Minister while an encounter rages on is totally out of sync. And the Prime Minister talking about yoga is, as you know, being criticized by the opposition. So, Sambit, come in on both these points.
Number one point, as far as the tweet of Mr. Rajnath Singh, the Home Minister, is concerned,
yes,
as you yourself pointed out, he just tweeted about the success of the combing operations yesterday. He did not say that the operation was over. Oh. And secondly, boosting the morale of the force, I believe there is no politics in that. I see nothing wrong in it if he says that we salute our jawans for whatever they did. That's something called as boosting the morale of our jawans, and we should all be doing it. Whether the combing down operation is over or not over.
General Hasnain, you do not say an operation is successful or failed till it's over. I've seen many encounters.
You are absolutely right, Barkha, but I think there's a context to it which has to be understood.
Yeah.
This Pathankot Air Base was the objective, I think, based on the idea which the terrorists had of what was achieved by the TTP in the Peshawar Air Base, for example, right?
Yeah.
Destruction of aircraft, helicopters, etc. Yeah. Now, I think yesterday what the Home Minister meant in his tweet or his statement or anything,
that the damage had been contained,
was a comparison. That, look here, we have been able to prevent entry into the main hangars, into the areas where the main assets were involved. You see, having a couple of casualties, etc., I know it's very insensitive on my part to say it, but it doesn't create that kind of a turbulence. But if you had scenes of helicopters burning, MiG-29s burning, it would have been a complete catastrophe as far as the media is concerned.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Home Minister...
So that the technical assets were ring-fenced is what you're saying he's calling successful. But I do believe that comment could have been avoided in the public domain, because there has been a lot of confusion in the communication approach. And we'll discuss that in a moment. I just want to get an Air Marshal Major to just talk about something. We saw attack choppers being deployed. This, for those of us who've reported on encounters, is atypical. Later it was officially confirmed, I am not speculating, it was officially confirmed that in fact at one point rockets were used to try and push the terrorists into one part of the airbase. How unusual would it be for these attack choppers to be deployed, and could you tell us what that means about the enormity of what we're actually seeing unfold at Pathankot?
Barkha, I'm not very sure if the RPs or rockets were actually fired by the Mi-35 gunships.
Mm.
They certainly were in the air. But in case,
yes,
either rockets or front guns were fired at a particular target, it must have basically been to get them out of that area.
Yeah, that's what I said. To move them into one area.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But I'm not very sure if this actually happened.
Okay.
But having assets such as the Mi-35s or any other gunship or a helicopter which is capable of locating and hitting a particular target, once of course, only after it's ensured that it is a terrorist, because that guy is also in fatigues, I don't see anything wrong with it if at all it has happened.
No, not at all wrong. I was just saying that does it make it unusual? Now, I want to come over some of the unanswered questions that have
I don't think it would make it unusual, okay, because that asset is readily available with you.
Fair enough. Ambassador Parthasarathy, do you believe, to pick up point one, do you believe, as Brigadier Kaval said, that the confusion over casualties pointed to an unclear communication policy, which we should have learned, both media and government, from 2611?
I would say that I had expected, after the fiasco during the 2611 attack, we would have a more coherent communications policy than we have today.
What could the government have done?
No, listen, this thing is quite clear, that you have to have contingency planning for such events.
Yes.
And it should be very clear in such events that, for example, I would, whatever it is, this may have been in an airbase, but generally the GOC of the area would be the coordinating officer.
Yeah.
And he would have his own spokesman who reports only to him.
Yeah.
You know, in communications in a terrorist situation, there's one point, and yeah, that one point is the man on the spot.
Yeah.
And as I said, in this case, you have not just an army division, you have a full army corps there. The
yeah,
corps headquarters
the mountain strike is going to come up there as well.
So I'm sure that in future, this should be made very, very clear that the senior most officer there, unless you're sending a team from Delhi, which you will not, with his duly designated spokesman gives information. And the other thing I would suggest is that during a situation, it should be solely the discretion of the commanding officer there what information to give when.
So this one point.
You mentioned
too
many people communicating.
Isn't that true?
Saying too many things.
All the ministers were giving initial responses.
Quite right. Far too many people speaking for no rhyme or reason. But more than that is that, for once, I'm glad you started by saying that there was intelligence, because normally we are in the first in the firing line, that this is not an intelligence failure.
But you know,
there was intelligence.
But you know, I was going to take that, because while we're on intelligence, a question could be asked, and I want all of you to weigh in on this, that despite that advanced intelligence, 7 fatalities, 20 injuries, and operation still ongoing, this is a question is going to come up.
So that's exactly what I was coming to, that not only did you have advanced intelligence, there is an incident, a serious incident, which takes place 24 hours before the airbase is entered or attacked or whatever, and it is a senior officer of the Punjab police involved, and he says that he had been waylaid by 4 terrorists, and for 24 hours, and then they take off with his mobile phone, which leads you to the gates of the Pathankot Air Base, and still nothing happens. And then the bigger question, or the linked question, is how do these people with so many weapons, how did they get in? This happened.
No, but this is my question.
This happened in the Dinanagar attack. The same route was followed. So, I hope I'm wrong. But then there was a rumor that there may be some,
insider
local support. I hope that is wrong.
So are you suspecting the same here? Are you saying that given the intelligence?
There are already rumors.
Yeah,
the Tribune carried a story that, some locals may be involved today. Now, my point is, I hope that is wrong. But if that is wrong, then obviously this route is very easy to come through. You can pay your way through.
So two questions
this is the route that is used by smugglers.
Yes, yeah. And there could be drug linkages and all the rest of
Absolutely.
It. But you raised a very important point, that if there was intel, General Hussain, then how did they get in with the weapons? How did they even get past the first tier? Why was that first tier? This is I don't want you to give away anything operational, but why would the first tier be the DSC and not the commandos who'd already been positioned there a day in advance? How could they get past the first tier?
To the years 2000-2001. I think most people have forgotten that the first time an airbase was ever struck was the Avantipur airbase.
I remember that.
It was struck and the Garuds actually eliminated all the terrorists at the gate.
Yes.
Right? Now, who were the people actually manning the gates at that time? It was the DSC again. It's not as if the DSC is a dead-out force. The DSC is still a trained force. There are ex-servicemen who have got a tremendous amount of experience there, and they have their training in Cannanore. But having said that, let me also put in this. Your greatest intelligence was not what Mr. Dulathit has spoken. Your greatest intelligence was a similar act had taken place on 26th of July this year.
Gurdaspur.
On the 27th morning, I wrote on this saying, the future operations are all going to be North Punjab based. There's a reason for it. South Punjab, you can
but
come
Mr.
in.
But Mr. Dulathit is still raising how they got in with weapons despite this intelligence.
This is exactly
actually you asked the question.
That is the failure. But that's a failure.
So which part is the failure? What part is the failure?
The failure starts essentially from the fact that we could not prevent their entry. We know that this is the area through which it has happened before.
So you're saying the very infiltration is where the breach is.
I am always the first person to say that 100% counter-infiltration is not possible.
Okay, I want to weave from Pakistan. Wajad Khan, senior journalist, is with us. Brigadier Kaval, you want to add to that quickly?
You asked the question, Barkha. Yes. How did they cross the first year?
Yes.
They crossed the first year because there is no first year. There are some platoons of the DSC guarding the base. It's a 26 to 30 square kilometers large base. There are possibly 3 to 4 platoons, maybe 5. They are grossly inadequate for the task. They're retired people, armed perhaps with SLRs or maybe even the INSAS rifle. They are capable of manning gates. They are capable of manning
posts. That's why I asked that if NSG was sent in a day earlier.
Yeah,
is it the Air Marshal who's trying to add something? I'm not actually sure. Air Marshal, is it you? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Barkha,
we must understand one thing, that the Garud commandos of the Indian Air Force are very few, and they were basically raised for certain specific Air Force tasks,
yeah,
and not for airfield protection because the numbers were small.
Yes.
It was only later that for protection of the airfield, as the numbers increased, they got involved. What is required today is that the DSC, while they put up a great fight in this particular encounter, but their age and their continuity training, unlike that of an infantry battalion or any other army unit, is not as good.
But the question I'm asking is why the NSG was not deployed.
This is a lesson.
Sir, the question I'm asking is the
NSG was not at the base.
As far as I know, the advance intelligence meant that commandos were placed there on the eve of this this unfolding.
NSG never goes in to do a protective job.
I see. Okay.
They don't go and form a ring around.
Yeah.
They come in to strike. The task of the ring is that of all other persons, starting from the DSC. I would say perhaps the response should have been that a company of the infantry should have been deployed there, if it was required.
Exactly.
If the threat perception was there, a company of the infantry should have been deployed.
Now that you've raised the question, why was the NSG involved at all?
Why was the NSG
involved at all?
No, why not?
It is a counter-terrorism force.
But this is a terror attack.
This is not an urban terrain.
This was a military base.
Yes.
The armed forces should have handled the contingency by themselves.
At Nahan, you have got special forces units there. From Nahan is closer than Delhi. It should have been flown in immediately. And I can assure you, all command and control problems would have been resolved. The army would have been totally in charge.
I entirely agree.
Like General Hasnain said,
dealing with such a situation, you need unit.
But there is one lesson in this.
Unity of command.
Unity of command.
Unity of command is crucial. And if you've got, look, in the border areas, there's no shortage of special forces trained for this sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay, let me just get a perspective from Pakistan, then I want to get the politicians back. Amashu, give me half a second. Wajahat Khan, a senior journalist, is with us. He's from Karachi. Wajahat, how is Pakistan looking at this? In India, there's a widespread sort of debate over whether this is payback for the risk that the Prime Minister Modi took by meeting your Prime Minister in Lahore. I know you were traveling with Prime Minister Sharif in Balochistan just a day or so ago. To Indians, this would reinforce, as Ambassador Parthasarathy has just said, that the Pakistan Army and the ISI are not on board with any meaningful India initiative.
Hi, Barka. Good to be on. Hell of a debate you've got brewing over there. I would say that the skepticism, the way the attack has unfolded and the way there's a lot of loose ends around here. Usually there's a lot of conspiracists ready to pounce at this being a homegrown Indian drama.
Surely you can't be serious.
Of course not.
Let's not trivialize what's happening. Our soldiers are still dying there. An encounter is still on. We cannot possibly allow
deliberately, I call that. There's a lot of conspiracy theory minded folks here, a lot of nutters out here. But let me tell you, at the larger level, strategically, I think there's a lot of parity. From what I understand, there's a lot of parity at the highest levels of civilian and military power. There's a lot of same pagedness. The Prime Minister, the top army command, etc., are on the same page about this. I also, besides traveling with the Prime Minister, also managed to hang out with the National Security Advisor, who you know is a recently retired 3-star general, a very important one. And on background, I can't give you direct quotes here, but let me give you a broad idea about how his meeting went down with Ajit Doval. I heard from sources, very, very becoming sources, that was a very important meeting. That was the real breakthrough. In fact, that is what set the stage for everything which has happened since. So even down, and considering that Jaipur represents both the civil and military establishments, he's been placed there for a very particular role, which is to make sure both sides converge.
So what are you saying? Are you saying that if this is the Jaish, it's not in control of the Pakistan military, because nobody believes that here? Why is a Masood Azhar never been prosecuted for IC-814 is the question that Indians would ask. Why does he roam free with impunity?
Listen, all I'm saying is right now, it's beyond the Jaish-e-Mohammed, it sounds like the Jaish-e-Star Wars. Yeah, these guys are, who are these guys? How did they manage to get in? You're the guys having the debate right now. I need a lot of clarity. I would prefer it to give me some clarity.
Ambassador Parthasarathy, I'll allow you to come in there, because the thing is, and you know, that's why I got a journalist today instead of a politician. Wajad, have a second.
I'll agree with one thing with what Wajad said.
Which is
that there was some very plain talking in Thailand.
Yeah.
And the...
Yet the Pakistani NSA was not present, as far as I know, when Prime Minister Modi met Prime Minister Sharif. Let's underline that fact.
The fact of the matter is that's a question Wajahat will have to answer. If the army was so much in the picture, why was the NSA not there in Lahore?
Wajahat, quick response. Why was the Pakistani NSA not in the meeting?
The other point I want to ask Wajahat. Wajahat. One other little point.
The NSA was not there because all of this was rather surprising for everyone. The Foreign Secretary was there.
There was a way for... Okay. What's your next question? I have to take a break.
I have just one little point for Wajahat.
Wajahat, Pastor saying something to you.
Wajahat, like you, I have a great respect for Cyril Almeida of the Dawn.
Yeah,
and he doesn't entirely agree with what you are saying about the army and the civilian establishment being on the same page.
Yeah,
there are still differences and rivalries.
Ask him his opinion.
We're taking a quick break.
No, what I'm saying is yours is not a unanimous Pakistani.
Absolutely,
opinion.
We're taking a quick break. Wajad, back in a second. We're taking a quick break. We continue with our special analysis. Back to Abhishek Singhvi and Sambit Patra. After that break, that encounter is still on, and many questions about where the Pakistan policy is headed, should be headed. The Prime Minister is chairing, in fact, a meeting as we speak at his residence with the National Security Advisor, Ajit Doval, present. A break, and we'll be back with more on that unfolding story in a moment from now. You're watching our special analysis of the ongoing encounter at Pathankot Air Base. Remember, it has now been almost 36 hours, but it's very, very clear that this is an operation that is still ongoing. The Prime Minister is at this moment chairing a high-level meeting being attended by the National Security Advisor, the Foreign Secretary and the Home Secretary. The Home Minister may have not chosen his words very carefully when he spoke about it being a successful operation yesterday when the operation was not even over. General Hasnain, who's here, is contextual that by explaining to us that could be to underscore the point that the technical assets at the base are safe. Even so, many questions, including where the Prime Minister's Pakistan policy should be headed next. Will those Foreign Secretary talks continue? Some opposition leaders like Omar Abdullah questioning why the Prime Minister was, or the Prime Minister's office was tweeting about yoga at a time like this. The Prime Minister himself, very interestingly, not mentioning Pakistan in his public responses at all. Joining the panel is Ambassador Jayant Prasad as well as Mihir Sharma from the Business Standard. Let me take this quickly back to Abhishek and Sambit, who've been listening very carefully. Abhishek, what you've heard here from experts who've actually fought these battles is an operational critique. And there will be a post-mortem, much more detailed once the operation is over. But you're also hearing from Pakistan, Wajahat Khan, as a senior journalist, on the attitude there, that the conspiracy theories have begun, that there will always be that kind of denial every time you try and have this argument with Pakistan. Now the question becomes, Do you as the opposition hold the Prime Minister and the BJP to account for their previous comments, or do we just accept that the Congress and the BJP have swapped roles on Pakistan?
No, I think it's nothing as simplistic as that in foreign policy or Pakistan. The first point is that all such operations must have a very minute, nitty-gritty operational review. Now, there's an interesting irony here. Either we had remarkable advanced intelligence information, and obviously a lot of us are handicapped because we don't have exact information.
Yeah.
But either we had advanced intelligence information, in which case the question arises, how could then it be allowed to happen?
Yeah.
Or we do not have, so we need to know what kind of intelligence information it was, very vague, ambiguous, general, as sometimes it is. And the second thing is, What about the fact that these people were roaming around virtually in broad daylight? What about the state police forces, the peripheral forces, the boundary forces, and then the specialized forces?
Yeah.
So these are two operational questions which must be critiqued and stored and recorded and remedied for future. Because it's very important to learn from every mistake, not in a blame-pointing game, but for the future. Second, as far as Pakistan is concerned, I don't think we need to be concerned about that kind of reaction, because these reactions are very standard in Pakistan. It's also based partly on what information they are fed, on the entire surrounding data exchange there happens on this. I think that part need not bother us. We need to be very clear about what is happening here in our country. And thirdly, there is no swapping of roles issue here. As far as the Congress is concerned, I think our standard is very clear. It's been one of constructive, deep, continuous engagement, but with great caution.
Yeah.
And always trying to be on the alert.
I think you have taken that measured position, but not everybody in the party did yesterday. Abhishek, I must tell you that. Ambassador, what does this mean for the Pakistan policy that has clearly entered a new phase with the Lahore stopover? Before that, it was red lines that may or may not have been sustainable. They've shifted tack. Can this sustain the shifting of tack after what we're seeing happening in Pathankot?
Barkha, we know from the start, and looking at the history of India-Pakistan engagement, that whenever you engage with Pakistan, the path is full of potholes.
Yes.
And many times India has been confronted with situations where we choose the least bad among a series of very
pretty
poor
not so
options.
Great options. Yeah,
yeah. Poor options. And look at what happened with the same Prime Minister in Kargil when the Pakistanis decided, the Pakistan Army decided, that with the advantage of stealth and surprise, they could upset the existing status quo in Kargil. And due to the nuclear balance that existed at the time between India and Pakistan, India would not have a riposte to it and would not seek
to... So you believe this too is the imprint of the Pakistan Army?
You know, clearly, and this is something that I share with both General Ata Hasnain and Ambassador Parth Sarthi, that the Pakistani DNA is so evident in it because of the manner in which...
when you say the Pakistani DNA, you mean the Pakistani security establishment's DNA?
No. So where exactly does the responsibility lie? Let's not be in a hurry. Let's determine it and let's see who is responsible and take appropriate measures. I don't want to second guess what we are going to find out or what we may be in the process of having found out already.
Okay. Mihir, the questions are also for Indians to debate. You know, we will all disagree with Wajahat on this program tonight as Indians. But within India, there is a deeper debate.
I don't...
One second, Wajahat. I'm not... My question is to Mihir. Hang on. I'm coming to you.
It's a really odd thing to say.
What?
It's a terrible thing to say.
What is a terrible thing?
That's a terrible thing to say that we will all as Indians agree with Wajahat.
Disagree. I said it tends to happen.
That's a terrible thing. Exactly. Listen, Wajahat. I spoke to the Prime Minister about the derailment of the process 48 hours ago.
Okay.
And we talked to him. And we said, what's it going to take? Do you feel that this is going to get derailed? And he was very honest about it. He said, listen, the chances of derailment because of some aberrant activities, that interview, by the way, will air tonight. See that on my channel, Dunya News, at 10 p.m. He said the chances of an aberrant activity disrupting the process as it stands today are high because the process has been started. But there must be some serious soul searching from both sides about what the larger goals are.
Okay, now let me come in on this. What I meant by my statement that you found terrible is that there is sometimes a sense, and we all on the defensive, and Indians and Pakistanis are talking against the backdrop of a terror encounter, that we do see things very differently. For example, what you're calling an aberration is seen here by our experts.
Hold on.
The Prime Minister, what you're quoting the Prime Minister on, all right. But previously you agreed with it. Previously, you agreed with it.
Prime Minister of Pakistan, I'm trying to translate from the Urdu to the English.
Okay.
And he said that the chances are higher of this process being disrupted now that it has started.
Okay.
And there must be some serious soul searching, even more if, khuda na khasta, there is an attack or some other problem.
Okay.
He said so. He used the term khuda na khasta. He said if khuda na khasta, there is a problem tomorrow, there must be some serious soul searching from both sides. about what the okay. real goal
fair
is
enough.
For peace.
Vajad, fair enough.
That's
but,
it.
Okay,
That's
Vajad, it. Vajad, my question to Mihir was actually a little bit about our domestic argument here. So give me a second to put that to Mihir. Mihir, on your Twitter feed, you have raised many questions. You have been extremely critical today. At a time when some would argue that while the encounter is on, maybe all of us should hold fire on our criticism. What bothers you about what you've seen so far? We've already agreed on two things before you came. The communication strategy has been confused. Ambassador Parthasarathy said there should have been a one-point person. Everybody agreed. One-point center of communication. He believes, ideally, that should have been the general officer commanding on the ground. Two, both General Hasnain and Brigadier Kaval felt the NSG should not have been deployed at all. Right, General Hasnain?
Absolutely.
So these two points we have flagged. Where do you want to come in on what you would say to Sambit Patra of the BJP tonight?
I think that while I understand that maybe the Home Minister's tweet was not a declaration of success in the sense that
of
it
closure.
Was understood,
yeah.
This a declaration of closure. It definitely gave us a sense of closure last night,
yeah.
which then was belied this morning.
Yeah.
And I think this unfortunately fed into a narrative that has followed this government so far, which is that it is too quick to declare victory, it is too quick to declare success. Mm-hmm. And in matters such as this in particular, it should be doubly careful about giving people a sense of security as and when, you know, even when the operations are ongoing. Mm. If it is a case that operations are ongoing, as you say, set up a media center, all right, have a single point briefing, make it terse, all right, things are still ongoing, we'll get back to you as and when we know exactly how many people have died, exactly how many people have infiltrated, exactly what, how we countered it. All right. Unfortunately, there were 15 different numbers coming out as yeah. to how many people had died.
Yeah.
With 15 different times at which we felt the
operation was almost over.
Was almost
Actually,
over.
The first coherent briefing we saw was off the Home Secretary this
at 5 p.m.
At 5 p.m. Yeah. Ambassador Patra, before I get Sambit Patra to come in on that, you met with the Foreign Minister today. Was this meeting set up in response to what happened, or was this pre-scheduled? If we can ask you without your giving away too
much. I'll go so far and say it was pre-scheduled.
Pre-scheduled. But obviously, Pathankot would have taken over the conversation. What was the general consensus? Can you share anything with us?
Let me put it this way. You know, I'm very forgetful in what happens in closed door meetings. So, but you want my views, I'll let you have it.
No, but to what Mihir has said, and I want Sambit to respond to that before we slip into a break. Yeah.
No, look, these are evolving situations as far as I'm concerned.
You think Rajnath should not have made that comment?
Look, I don't know under what circumstances and compulsions the Home Minister even talks. But as I said, in my view, ab initio, it should be single point.
General, say quickly, then I want Sambit to respond.
I agree that it should be single point. But to that extent that the Home Minister comes in and makes a tweet and just gives an information for the motivation of these forces, perhaps, I don't see anything wrong in that. And that really was not signaling a closure to the operation. Because the closure to the operation will
people,
be a much larger...
Sir, maybe you understood that. But you don't think people...
I agree that the
would have read it
public
as,
will not understand it.
You want to add to that, Ambassador? Then Sambit, very quickly, please come in on all these points. Yeah.
No, I just want to add a footnote to all...
See, I've been hearing
discussed.
Everyone...
One second, Sambit. Half a second, Sambit. Sambit, half a okay. second. Half a second.
One point of clarification. The consequences could have been far worse than what we have seen.
Yes.
If I take you back 2-3 years,
yes.
In 2011, there was an attack on the Pakistani naval arm where
yes.
two PC-3 Orions had been
yes.
destroyed in Mehran.
Yes.
Worth $1 billion almost.
The next year in Camp Bastion, there were 6 or 8, I think, Harrier jump jets that were destroyed,
yeah.
worth close to $1 billion.
Yeah.
And this was a huge attack by the Taliban, where Marine Corps colonel
so
was...
So you're saying this could have happened?
This could have
not.
Happened, and all the air assets had been removed.
Yeah.
Significant assets had been taken out of the station.
Okay. Sambit, quickly before we go into a break, the Rajnath tweet, Mihir Sharma saying the too quick to declare victory...
No, in fact, it was nothing like declaring a victory. As far as the tweet is concerned, we have already discussed about it, that it was a successful operation in the context, as rightly pointed out by the previous speaker, that otherwise a huge amount of damage would have been done. If the right intelligence feeds would not have been taken, if the right deployment would not have taken place, then the amount of damage to the assets that the country would have been seen would have been really terrible. So I think to that extent, it was a successful operation even yesterday and as it is today. And patting the back of the Jawans, I believe, believe is the duty of the Home Minister, the Prime Minister, and every spokesperson. So that that does not mean that the tweet was wrong. As far as communication is concerned, that's the problem in this media age, you know, where you want 24/7 feeds. I think this was a successful strategy where every second commentary was not going on. That, well, yes, the helicopter has taken off. Now we can see the helicopter in the left direction. Now the preparedness to fire on the terrorist is on. I think that kind of expectation from the media was not met this time.
That's not the expectation. Sambit, that's not the expectation. If you have 3 briefings a day and you say, this is what we know and we can say no more.
10 seconds. Yeah. 10 seconds.
But
10
only one
seconds.
Person has that briefing, or a set of 2 people have that briefing. Instead of nobody basically talking to you. And then many people talking to you. It's a case of nobody talking and many people talking.
The question that was raised, in fact, was why the body counts were not rightly met. And today, if you would have heard Mr. Rishi Maharshi, in fact, the Home Secretary speaking, he told that. He said that we will give you the body counts in range, not in exact figures. So naturally, many of them may have picked up the lower range or the upper range, because till the combing operations are not done, in fact the body
count is not over. I have to take a break. I'm sure Mihir has something to say to that, but we will take a break.
It's difficult to know the exact numbers.
We will take a break at 9 o'clock sharp. We are back with the latest from Pathankot, the Prime Minister's meeting that is still underway, and the lessons that we are already learning from what we are seeing happen in Pathankot, but what it says about Prime Minister's Pakistan policy, and will he hold his nerve and continue this path, or does he risk a political backlash on it? Coming back in a moment from now. Good evening. The operation at Pathankot is still on. The government at the moment, chaired by the Prime Minister, is locked into a high-level meeting. It's being attended by the National Security Advisor, the Foreign Secretary, as well as the Home Secretary. We are looking on this program at not just the questions that are thrown up by this ongoing operation, but also what it means for the Prime Minister's Pakistan policy. Is Pathankot and the attack at the airbase the first stumble, an expected stumble perhaps, after the Lahore leap? Sudhir Ranjan Sen, my colleague, is on the ground reporting live. Sudhi, is there any movement at all, again without giving away any operational details from when we last spoke? What is happening there right now?
Well, Barkha, give you a brief understanding, the gunfire that we were hearing very frequently, say even 40 minutes to an hour ago, has really gone down. Now, whether the operations had, you know, like yesterday, have been halted because of nightfall, we are not being able to clarify that from where we stand. We don't have a confirmation on that. Till about 40 minutes to an hour ago, we can say that there were regular gunshots that were coming out. What we can see from where we stand is that, you know, like yesterday, helicopters still hovering around and still trying to, you know, scan large swaths of ground within the Indian Air Force base. So they would be basically checking with night vision devices and other sensors to find out if there are any other terrorists or any other IEDs that they can locate. So that basically is what is happening on the ground. Also on the ground, we can tell you that the ground commanders very clearly saying that do not speculate about numbers, because the numbers could be one, could be more. We've had indications from the Home Secretary, from the Deputy Chief Minister of Punjab, indicating that the numbers may not be 5, could be more, or it could be 5. So that is basically what is happening at the moment.
Okay. Thank you, Sudhi. Thanks very much. So we're being extremely careful here, General Hasnain, but questions will be asked by people who have not seen conflicts, who have not seen encounters. If advance intelligence was there, why is it taking so long? This is a common perception that you hear all the time. Now, you've made two very, very important points. You don't believe the NSG should have been deployed at all. And I was asking you, why was the NSG not deployed to begin with?
Absolutely.
What would you have done?
Well, right at the outset, I suppose the moment you hear of terrorism, the immediate response is bring in the NSG. You don't realize that there are so many other resources that you have locally. For example, in Kashmir Valley, if a major operation is underway, you're not going to get the NSG inside there. You have a para commando battalion and SF battalion, which is locally available. Mm. Similarly, with Western Command of the Indian Army, you have specialized forces available with you. So This is, first of all, I would also recommend, because of the simple reason that an Air Force base and special forces have close affinity between themselves. They understand each other extremely well. In Agra, they do all their free falls and their parachuting and things like that. They're naturally aligned to each other. It would have been a much better decision. Just bring in an SF unit. Command and control would be much simpler. You would just have the para SF, you have the infantry there, and you need the Punjab
police. And SF is special forces for our viewers.
Punjab police is required. Yes,
special Punjab forces. Police. And Punjab we actually have spoken necessary. About where the Punjab police is in this whole thing. Marshal, you wanted to come in, Chief Marshal Major.
My only point is about the protection of air assets and airfields,
yes,
which are located. I'm not talking about airfields which are deep inside in the south or wherever. But I'm talking especially about airfields such as Pathankot, Srinagar, Avantipur, etc. in that area. DSC is okay. They're well trained. But given the kind of the security scenario and the kind of terrorism which is which obtains today in our part of the world, I think what is required is that a large number of Garuds from the Air Force. And Air Force has been asking for this for a very long time, because I know, and some special equipment. I think the government, if I may humbly request them, should look into this, that these critical air bases close to the boundary, international boundary and the LC, should be guarded by specialist forces and specialist equipment.
And I want to come back to what happens next. Now, Ambassador Partha Sarathy, you were saying the Foreign Secretary should meet. Engagement should not end. I'm hearing Ambassador Prasad actually echo that, that there are only a bunch of limited options and therefore engagement is a kind of inevitability.
Yeah.
But, what some may say is, imagine if Manmohan Singh was Prime Minister today and this happened. Mm. You know, there's also the BJP being tailed by its own past stated positions. Will that prove to be a problem as the Prime Minister tries to craft a new Pakistan policy? Because let's face it, it's new. It's very different from the red lines that were initially sought to be drawn.
Let me tell you one thing. I'm not in politics, but narrate to you something very interesting.
Yes.
At the height of the Bangladesh crisis, Mr. Vajpayee and the BJP did not criticize the government. But they were severely critical of the Simla agreement with Mrs. Gandhi signed. Mm. The day Mr. Vajpayee became foreign minister, he went and lauded the merits of the Simla agreement in his meetings with Prime Minister Bhutto. Now, when you are in opposition, you say some things. When you are, and he was asked this. And he said, "Jai, vipaksh mein hum bahut kuch kehte hain, ab sarkar mein hain." Now, this, I would urge that we don't over-politicize security and foreign policy. Yeah. Okay? All these things, we leave that to the politicians. That after all, an opposition is there to oppose. But I think we as people who are not in the political arena would, at least I think Jayant, the General, and I, and I'm sure Mr. Vima also, we would analyze and give our best analytical view. I would not comment on a political view because, as I believe, that when push comes to shove, our political parties are all very mature. And in a crisis, we have always stood together.
Okay.
Otherwise, this, you know, you shouldn't have done this, I should have done that. This will go on. It's a part of politics.
But a government can be, any government pursuing a path of dialogue or engagement with Pakistan is constrained by many variables. I just want to get a perspective from Captain Amrinder Singh, who is, of course, a senior Congress leader, the head of the Congress in Punjab, appreciated widely even by the BJP for his very mature statements as this encounter was unfolding. Captain Saab, now we know that this encounter is still on. Just your thoughts, what you would say today, of course, 7 Indians martyred, 20 injured. We have that number now. We still don't know how many terrorists in the end will be neutralized. There's also questions arising about the Punjab police, about whether the breach should have happened to begin with, whether that was the weak link. What would you say, sir?
Well, the area, Barkha, where they seem to have come through was where they came through earlier at Dinanagar some months ago, yes, which is the Shakargarh bulge. And that area is not very well covered because the Ravi flows by and you can't have every fencing going right through the river. So I think that porosity seems to have made that a route for them to come through. Having said that, I don't know how many are in, but yes, it's been going on since yesterday. And According to that SP who was picked up yesterday, which I don't know why they stopped him in the first place. I mean, if their objective was a Pathankot airfield, then they shouldn't have given their game away earlier. But anyway, that helped because it put everyone on the Punjab police on alert. And I think alerted the army and alerted the air force, everybody. So it probably did help save our aircraft and all that were in Pathankot. But it was, how many people they are, God alone knows. But yes, obviously they are committed fighters. If they have, so many of our boys have been killed and wounded in this battle, then they have come here to die and they are going to kill as many and injure as many as they can.
But Captain Amrinder, this raises questions and we're discussing here. The Prime Minister is chairing a high-level meeting right now. There are foreign secretaries scheduled to meet in Islamabad on the 15th. Would you, especially as a senior Punjab politician, continue to say that engagement must persist? Or would you, as somebody who's also been in the military and seen conflict and war, say that with this happening, with the airbase under attack, we would have to review that policy of engagement?
No, I don't. I've never believed that. I believe that the ultimate answer lies in dialogue and to have this dialogue with Pakistan and to find some sort of a solution. How much are we going to fight? We've been fighting for the last 68 years. We've had three wars, we've had everything. Eventually it has to be across the table. And I think these are those spoilers. There's a 99.9% of Pakistan may want to have peace with India, but there is that 0.01%. Led by this IS, this is the Jaish-e-Mohammed who've done it.
Yeah.
And they are all under the control of the ISI, and these guys don't want peace because the relevance of the army goes then. If they are friendly with China, they become friendly with India, then who wants an army, such a large army and such a big defense budget? So it's their own, the army which is keeping this thing, the pot boiling.
So you are saying that to you it reflects that Pakistan army is not on board with Nawaz Sharif?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if this was the case, who controls the ISI? The army. And the ISI controls the Jaish Mohammed. Their handlers are talking to them across, so we are told, their conversation is being picked up. So it's obviously an operation which is conducted by the ISI. And but you know, having said that, these things are going to happen. Whenever India goes towards peace, this happens. We had that when Mr. Vajpayee went off to Kargil, to Lahore, and Kargil was already in the office.
Yeah.
Then we have this now, that the Prime Minister visits Lahore and you have somebody sending somebody across here to do this incident today. The thing is that there are people who don't want it. Now the question is, if every time something like this happens, you call off the talks, you'll never reach a conclusion.
Okay, thank you, Captain Amrinder Singh. So we've actually had two very, very reasonable Congress perspectives on this program. I'm not sure as a party eventually what they will decide. Mihir, to you, the inconsistencies, you have pointed them out of the BJP position, but I think should those inconsistencies define, or should past inconsistencies define future policy?
Not at all. And I think that what all of us hope is that Mr. Modi has the political capital that Dr. Manmohan Singh did not have to move forward with a sustainable peace process or with a sustainable dialogue process, even when things like this happen, all right? And whether or not the Congress will eventually wind up being less confrontational than the BJP was is irrelevant.
Yeah.
The point is, does Mr. Modi himself have the fortitude when, in the face of what will be, I'm sure, some fairly trenchant criticism within his party?
Yeah.
To keep on.
He also has his own support base, which has often been, a section of it has been hawkish on Pakistan.
I think a reasonable proportion of them are probably upset by the fact that he was not visibly bellicose today.
Yeah.
And I think that on the contrary, that showed great maturity. And it's a prime ministerial quality to wait for all the information to be in before you take a decision. And it's entirely possible that Mr. Modi will, if there is some evidence that is discovered subsequently, take a decision to keep the talks going while simultaneously taking some, you know, unknown or possibly covert action. We don't know.
Yeah.
But the point remains that I think he has the political capital, which the last Prime Minister did not have, to move forward even in the face of something like this.
Okay, let me get last comments from all of you. Ambassador Jayant Prasad, is there a paradigm for India and Pakistan that is beyond talks and no talks? There has to be a third way. Maybe it has to involve parallel tracks. Because one thing we have to accept is that there's a horrific sense of deja vu. For those of us who have followed these stories, this is written into the script.
The cue is really in your question. of pursuing parallel tracks because we have no way out of it.
Yeah.
The succession of initiatives taken by Prime Minister Mr. Modi, from Ufa to Paris to Bangkok and to Lahore, have unnerved the Islam Pasand forces within Pakistan and their handlers.
Explain Islam Pasand forces to viewers.
It is the Jaish-e-Mohammed, the LET, the terrorist groups that are under the control of the Pakistan military establishment. So when I say the Islam Pasand forces and their handlers, their handlers are the Pakistan army. Now, we will consistently have opposition from that element. So we have to develop prophylactic measures. We have to develop a sub-conventional means of dealing with this constant problem. We have dealt with it in another way in all these years by turning, in effect, our back on Pakistan. And by getting on with our own ongoing transformation, we have to remain engaged with Pakistan. There is no running away from it, but that doesn't mean that Pakistan can act with impunity.
Yes. Wajahat, I can tell you this, that tonight on Indian television, this is the most reasonable set of Indians that you can find. I shudder to think what's happening on other channels at this moment. So just keep that in mind while you make your last comments.
Okay. Yeah, my phone's about to die. So
okay, quickly.
Listen, this is great news, right? There's a lot of sane, cool heads here. And let's play this out, right? Let's assume let's go two routes, right? And one route, we disengage, and there's no talking, and it's back to exchanging barbs, and then barbs become artillery fire, and then Sialkot and Jammu and what we've been seeing in the last 18 months happens.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, Kerry flies into Islamabad and says, all right, everyone, calm down, okay? Mm. And so we calm down, or the National Security Advisor comes from Washington or whatever. And
Okay, that's scenario one. Okay.
The other route, and I think is a more interesting, it's a more challenging route, is that let's assume that you guys are right. Let's assume that this was engineered from Pakistan. I'm not saying it was, I'm saying let's assume it was. Mm. And let's assume that the saner heads, the cooler heads prevail, and we still talk. And tomorrow, Mr. Doval does meet General Janjua and says, hey, mate, had a great time in Bangkok, but now have some bad news. This is what we know.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, General Janjua turns around and says, listen, that's a tough cookie for me to swallow, but this is what we know. So both sides decide to be realistic about solving the problem and say, all right, you know what? You have beef on us. We have beef on you. Let's go back and take this
but
forward.
But that equivalence, no Indian would accept. Wajahat, that equivalence that we have this on you and we have this on you, nobody would accept here.
Give me 20 seconds.
Okay, 20 seconds. Really, I have to take last comments. Okay.
All I'm saying is the talking must become an institution as well. Not just the threats, but the talking. And when the talking becomes an institution, God knows where it will lead us.
Okay.
But it will definitely dismember and partially dismantle the threat. And the threat must be dealt with.
So what you're saying is insulate the talking from terror attacks. Now, Sambit Patra, when that was attempted by Manmohan Singh and Sharm el-Sheikh, not even his own party, leave alone you, supported him. That was exactly that line
Why? Nobody disagreed with the engagement.
Sharm el-Sheikh and this is absolutely different.
No. Sambit, let me finish.
Yeah.
Nobody disagreed with him engaging in Sharm el-Sheikh. It was a ridiculous declaration they came out with, which everybody disagreed. Nobody disagreed with that engagement.
Okay, Sambit, quick last word, then last comments only on the clock now. Sambit?
As far as the talks with Pakistan are concerned, I'm not going to comment on it because I'm not going to trespass into a zone which is speculative. I'm not aware of the fact as to what the decision of the government is. So let us very patiently wait what the government comes up with after meetings and all. And secondly, as far as comparing this with Sharm el-Sheikh is concerned, I believe that these are two opposite poles, you know. Sharm el-Sheikh, as rightly pointed out by Parthaji right now, it was kneeling before the Pakistani dispensation, agreeing to include the word Balochistan in the joint statement. The government has nothing. I mean, our government can never ever imagine of doing something like that. Let's wait.
Okay, let's wait. Air Chief Marshal.
My last word is ignore Pakistan for the next 3 months.
Ignore.
Quietly,
Not talk to them. Not talk. No, the foreign secretary should not talk.
No, talk to them. Do what you want with them. Huh. But do not make a big issue out of anything. But quietly do what you want to do without anyone knowing about it. And that will keep, will bring Pakistan on the table faster.
General Hussain.
Well, I would have expected a better and a more positive response from Pakistan. That's not happened. Hmm. Notwithstanding
that... See, let me put it to you like this. And I don't know what Wajahat will feel about this. Prime Minister Sharif, I don't know, maybe it's happened, could have picked up the phone and called Prime Minister Modi.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I personally feel that after the...
And if that's happened, then we don't know about it.
Just take 30 seconds on this. On the 25th of December, when the Prime Minister surprised everyone by reaching Lahore, I thought the obvious thing to everyone was that a possible attempt to waylay this entire process is just about on the way. It's going to happen in the next 15, 20, 30 days or whatever it is. Now, I'm sure we could have secured the dialogue. We could have had an engagement, even on telephone. We could have had an engagement. How are we going to respond if such a thing happens tomorrow? This contingency planning has never been...
But if the Pakistan military is not on board, as all of you say...
Well, everyone says that General Janjua, now a retired general, is on board. He is an NSA. He was there at the Bangkok talks. So
but he was not there at the Lahore talk.
Well,
let me put it this way, and let's be realistic. The fact of the matter is, Prime Minister has been there. The two Prime Ministers have met. As you know, I have been against the composite dialogue, but I do believe there has to be a process.
But isn't the Foreign Secretary meeting part of that composite dialogue process?
No, just a minute. A part of the a process of engagement. As I said, I was in touch with Nawaz Sharif during Kargil. So, I want the Foreign Secretary to go to give them every bit of evidence that we have on this.
You're saying engagement is different from dialogue?
From the dialogue process we had earlier.
Yes.
I fancy an engagement of a different form.
Yeah.
Let's see if it works out. But I would like the Foreign Secretary to go to present the evidence we have.
Absolutely.
And see where we move from there. You can't just say this has taken place. I'm sitting at home.
But what have those dossiers achieved? I mean, I think there were 9, 10 of them on 26-11.
Just a minute. Don't forget, all this has been taking place in the context of for the first time, the United States blaming the Lashkar-e-Taiba publicly and saying it was taken up with General Rahil Sharif, both by Kerry and by their defense secretary. So let us wait and see how this plays out, how it plays out internationally, because once we present all this to the Pakistanis, I'm pretty certain we are going to present it to the world. So let them present what they want, and as he says, let us
quickly
meet and talk it over.
You
have no other option. But one last point.
Yes.
We should not hesitate to pay Pakistan back in its own coin. That's my view. It's not a government policy. And it's high time we did it.
You know, Pakistan has been a firefighter within Pakistan and an incendiary towards its neighbors. Mm. So we have yet another opportunity of allowing Pakistan to decide whether its strategic significance in the region and the world should derive in the future from its nuisance value, or whether it should move towards stability and prosperity hand in hand with its neighbors. And here I say both neighbors, Afghanistan and India.
Yeah, Afghanistan, we should not forget. Mir, what do you see as the political challenge here for this government? Yeah, I'll give you the last
one. I think the crucial political challenge is to convince its own base about the need to keep a sustained engagement on with Pakistan.
Because his base is not happy with him, at least on social media today. They believe Pakistan should have been named. They believe he should not have been talking about yoga. These are BJP supporters I'm talking about, not the Congress, not the opposition.
So I say, if someone becomes the Prime Minister of India, his own party is the least of the problems.
Actually, I think in every case, people with giant majorities tend to lose because of their own parties subsequently. Yeah. So yes, he needs to make... A clarity on the nature and the aims of Pakistan policy, which has been generally lacking for a while, should be point number one. And point number two, I think be a clear and welcome break from the past, is some form of accountability and transparency on not just what may have gone right and wrong with the operational details of
the communication and how it was,
but also with what went wrong with communication. Why was it that we were continually being told, you know, sources yesterday were saying that Doval is on top of everything. Sources today are saying the Punjab police is, you know, was responsible. Who are these sources? Why is the government allowing, this government once again allowing a certain, you know, this sort of leaky ship media management thing to come in, which they were supposed to completely get rid of?
It's what I would call no one talking and everyone talking at the same time. General Hussain, we have to wrap this up.
Last bit.
Yeah.
Not this last time that this has happened, is going to happen again. Let's take home two major lessons, I think, which we have immediately learned. One is the aspect of command and control, already brought out very clearly. Single point commander, single responsibility.
Which
and
you would have made whom in this case?
In this case, it should have been the GOC sub-area or the GOC division, which is the closest there in Pathankot itself. And under him, his staff would have managed the media. And automatically, the second lesson is the aspect of the media management and control.
Yeah, yeah.
The processing of...
And when you said this is going to happen again...
I said it's going to happen again.
Absolutely.
It's not the last time this has happened. It is obvious.
It's absolutely going to happen.
And yet we are left with the inevitability of engagement.
Well, I suppose this is the two-track policy as you were talking about.
All right, we leave it there. That operation is still on. That high-level meeting is still going on at the Prime Minister's house. Thank you to our panel. A thought tonight for the 7 Indians who've been martyred, 20 other injured. One of them critically has had to be airlifted to Chandigarh. Another one of them, a Commonwealth medal winner, a shooter. Many, many extraordinary stories of courage also coming out from the air base as that operation is
our,
still on.
Our hearts go out to them.
Absolutely. And I think we must end with that tribute.
Deep
with the tribute, condolences, regrets, admiration. That encounter is still on, and we will keep you updated as soon as it is declared over. Thanks for watching. Goodbye.